Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. More places haunted than others. There are certain areas of the United States that just seem to be more haunted than others. What is it about these areas that just naturally attract those that should be departed? I grew up in Alabama, which is one of those places. You check Paranormal Activity pages, and where most states have one or two haunted locations, this one has dozens. Funny thing is, not all of them are even published. This one most certainly is not, until now. It was mostly just a local rumor, the kind that spreads from one person to another and gains a bit of steam as it flows. I'm not even sure how we first heard about it, but I had become obsessed with paranormal events, haunted places, and the afterlife in general. Now, this guy that I know, his name is Luke, he worked at the pizza place next door to the comic book shop where the four of us lived, which was just as interested in all these incidents as I was. There was Jamie, who was our house gimp, just followed along because he wanted to be involved, and Ben, the fourth resident of the comic book shops upstairs, who was 100% anti-paranormal and wanted no part of it. When we'd bring it up, he would mutter things about how we were stupid or that we shouldn't be fucking around with that kind of stuff and then go upstairs. The internet wasn't much back in those days. It was 1999. Cable modem was a long ways away for those of us who lived in rural Alabama. We were happy to finally have a 56K modem, so finding these places required research outside of the house. As we probed the library, poring over texts, grilling relatives about various places around our city that might have a paranormal incident connected to it, we all seemed to have only one connected place, the bridge. Oddly enough, I had never even heard of the bridge before this. It was quite literally out in the middle of nowhere, yet numerous people connected with paranormal events and hauntings all talked about this same place, the bridge. Some said that there was a suicide there during World War II when a young war widow threw herself off the bridge after throwing her children first, and that you could see them floating in the water below. Others said that a child had been run over there in the 1950s, and he would wave at people who drove by. It probably should have been enough that all of those stories ended with the same precaution. Don't go over that bridge at night. All the locals will drive 10 miles out of the way to avoid it. We were overzealous, late teen, early 20-somethings, and we saw it as a challenge and an adventure. It just so happened that the night we chose to drive over the bridge, another friend by the name of Clay was hanging out at the comic book store and became engrossed with the stories and wanted to go along. My car could easily seat four, so away we went with me manning the steering wheel. It was a cooler fall evening, and we drove with the windows down most of the way, smoking cigarettes and enjoying the drive through the old countryside. It was Luke who made the comment that this seriously looked like something out of the Blair Witch Project, a comment that we all agreed on. In the darkness, the hanging irrigation systems were designed to get water to the crops at these old farms, and it really looked bizarre. After driving for quite some time without seeing anything at all, we finally approached the bridge. It was old, wooden, with some sparse iron supports. It looked like it was probably constructed, then reinforced later, but it certainly did not look safe. It was only wide enough for one car to cross at a time, and I was driving a 1978 Mercury Grand Marquis, which meant not even a motorcycle could have passed. We sat there for a few moments, making sure that no cars were coming from the opposite direction and confirming that we were alone. Just to be sure, I cut off the engine and we sat there in the darkness. We were definitely alone. The stories about the locals avoiding the place had to be true because we couldn't see a light in any direction. I started the car and began to roll across the structure. I heard it creak and crack beneath my tires as I slowly rolled across it. "So now what?" Clay asked, throwing a cigarette onto the bridge and slumping down in the back seat. "Fuck if I know," Luke replied, looking all around. "Let's just go home, but stop by the gas station so I don't have to walk there later from Mountain Dew," Jamie said, shrugging. I nodded, rolling to the middle of the bridge, and then it hit us. All four adult males in my car suddenly felt a paralyzing, icy fear. I thought it was just me, as I felt something grip my stomach and twist it, pushing against my chest and stealing my oxygen. One glance to Luke revealed he was experiencing the same thing. I looked in the rearview mirror of my car and saw red glaring eyes from a dark figure standing literally 2 feet from my rear taillights. Jamie and Clay were both paralyzed with the same gripping terror. The figure began to move, passing from behind the car and walking to the side of it. I saw him pass the rear driver door of the car, his shadow filling the car. Suddenly, I felt a pressure against my knee and looked over to see Luke pressing down on my knee with his hand, trying to push my foot, but it was clamped on the brake. As the figure reached the driver's side of my car, he leaned over and I came face to face with what I can only describe as death. Those eyes, which I saw as red gleaming dots in my rearview mirror, were as bright as fire, and I could see right through him. I can only describe what happened next as pure adrenaline, but somehow I managed to shift my foot to the accelerator, and I pushed. The car spun and then ripped across the rest of the bridge. I looked in the rearview mirror. Nothing. For a few minutes, we drove in silence through the countryside. As we came closer to civilization, Clay was the first to speak with a simple, "What the fuck was that?" And at that moment, we all accepted that it wasn't just any one of us that had witnessed that monstrosity, but all of us collectively. Now, like all locals, we avoid that bridge, not just after dark, but in the daytime too. If you're ever traveling in rural Alabama and you come across an old rickety wooden bridge, reinforced with metal after passing irrigation systems strung up in the air, think twice before you venture across it. In fact, go out of your way to find an alternate route. Perhaps some mysteries are better unsolved, and some paranormal areas are better left unexplored. The old rented house. Not too long ago, my oldest uncle told me, along with my two sisters, about a time when he lived alone within a small rundown neighborhood for only 6 days. And yes, there is a good reason for his brief residence there. To this day, I still have chills thinking about what had happened to him. So I thought you'd like to hear the story. And this is what it is from his point of view. In 1978, I rented a house in a fairly isolated town for the time being. It was a one-story house that was overall petite in size, but at least I didn't have to pay much for it. I planned to move out once I had enough money to buy a new and larger house, but considering my job working at a deli, it wasn't going to be anytime soon. At that time, I was only 23 and had recently recovered from an ankle injury that I got during a motorcycle accident. I have had 2 ankle injuries prior to this one, so I was able to cope with the pain. But moving into this new house of mine, I had to drive an old 1971 Chevrolet Blazer that a friend had lent me. My brother Randy, who was 2 years older than me, came down to help me settle in. We lived about 45 minutes apart, so it wasn't too much trouble to visit. After all, Randy didn't want me to overwork my right ankle and have it severely injured again. As soon as he helped move the couches, the furniture, the bed, the toiletries, etc., out of the truck and into the house, Randy had to leave, claiming he had a date that night. All I had to do now was put away all the clothes, food, and dishes, and the job would be done. However, something struck me as odd when I was hanging my clothes in the bedroom. I noticed through the window that the window from the house next door was wide open. It wasn't the fact that it was open that caught me off guard. It was the fact that no car was parked in the driveway of that house, so I assumed no one was inside. In the end, I shrugged it off and didn't think too much of it. After a long day of hard work, I went to the living room and took a nap on the couch. The sun had already set by the time I woke up, so I had to move into my bedroom for a full night's rest. I realized that the blinds in my bedroom window were open the whole time, but right when I was about to close them, I saw something that made me jump for a quick second. In the neighboring house stood a pale woman, blankly staring at me from her window, which was still open. The moonlight was only able to reveal her grayish-looking skin and her long black hair. The face of the woman as expressionless and lifeless, almost like that of a ghost. I slowly took another peek out the window to ensure that I wasn't hallucinating. Surprisingly enough, the woman was no longer there. As frightened as I was, I reasoned that she was some socially awkward neighbor and who had just returned from work. I was probably too tired to have thought otherwise. Shortly after I collapsed on the twin-size bed and went to sleep, it was the morning after that really shocked me. When I got up to get ready for work, my right ankle suddenly gave out, causing me to fall to the ground. It hurt so much that my eyes started to tear up. I wondered, why is it hurting again? Did I really work my ankle that much yesterday? Whatever the case was, I wanted the pain to stop. I tried to take some painkillers, and then I tried to put an ice pack on my ankle to numb it, but to no avail. I couldn't afford skipping another day of work, so I just told my boss that I was going to be late. I sat and waited on the living room couch with the ice pack still on my ankle. Luckily enough, the pain eased up after about 30 minutes. I was now able to stand up and walk with only a slight limp on my right leg. And in a short amount of time, the pain was bearable enough for me to drive to work. Later that evening, I returned home with almost no pain in my right ankle. As I came out of my car, I couldn't help but look over to the neighbor's house. There was still no car in the driveway, so I made the assumption that the woman either hadn't returned from work yet or lived in the house in solitude without any means of transportation. I hope my first assumption was correct. The thought of a creepy pale woman who never leaves her house but stares into other people's houses terrified me. Before going to bed, I took 2 painkillers just in case the pain regressed the next morning. I laid down on my bed, staring at the ceiling, then at the window. The blinds were closed, so I couldn't see the house next door. But I was curious if the woman would be there again. Of course, I refused multiple times to look, but my burning curiosity needed to confirm whether the pale woman was there or not. I would rather have my questions answered right away than contemplate on all the several possibilities. Therefore, I managed to convince myself that peeking out the window was the best option. I slowly crept towards my bedroom window and cautiously peeked through the blinds. When my eyes squinted, I peered outside into the darkness. Slowly but surely, I opened my eyes until the other side was clearly in view. There she stood, the pale woman with long black hair in the open window. This time, her head was tilted to the right from my point of view. Her face was as expressionless as the first time I saw her, but her eyes seemed to be even more lifeless, as if they could look right through your soul. I didn't jump this time, but my limbs started to tremble with fear. She just stood there, with no movement whatsoever, staring at me. I couldn't even let out a single breath. I was so scared. I looked down at my legs for a second in order to gather myself. I knew that if I looked up again, the pale woman would disappear like before. So I slowly tilted my head up, opened the blinds with my fingers, and glanced to the other side. The woman stood there no longer, as I had hoped. Once again, I looked away for 1 second, then back towards the other window for reassurance. She still wasn't there. Quite relieved, I went back to bed thinking that the woman was simply trying to mess with me. I tried to get up for work the next morning, but like the day before, I fell to the ground. The throbbing ankle pains were back, and I couldn't believe it. I thought the medication I took before bed would have prevented the pain, let alone lessened it. Moreover, I felt even more pain that morning than on any other day. I called Randy and asked what I should do. Randy told me to continue using the painkillers and the ice pack, and if the pain still progressed, he would take me to the hospital. I took my brother's word into consideration and used the painkillers and the ice pack like I had done before. To my relief, the pain gradually lessened within an hour. So I stood on my feet, walked off the lingering pain, and drove to work. The same night I returned home, with little to no pain left on my right ankle, I looked over to the other house for the hell of it, but nothing had changed. There was still no car in the driveway, and the strange woman was probably inside plotting new ways to scare me. This time around, however, I promised myself that I wouldn't look out my bedroom window, regardless of how tempting it was. I even started to think irrationally, believing that my ankle pains were the result of seeing the pale woman before going to sleep. And because of that, I went straight to bed that evening without considering looking out the window. Unfortunately, the pain still came back as soon as I woke up, but now it was so unbearable that I couldn't even move my right leg without feeling a stab at my ankle. I called Randy, bawling my eyes out about how intense the pain was. He promised that he would take me to the hospital since the injury was a lot more complex than we thought. Both of us still don't know the reason for the recurring ankle pain. Even though I did my normal routine of taking painkillers and using the ice pack to alleviate the pain, there was little to no effect. In only 30 minutes, my brother had arrived as fast as he could by speeding, of course. Now, the only thing I had to do was cope with the pain for another 30 minutes until we arrived at the hospital. The doctor asked me to rate the pain from a scale of 1 to 10, in which I answered 11. Afterwards, the doctor took an x-ray of my right ankle and said the results should come in a day or so. Like I've mentioned before, I was the type who always wanted answers right away, so it irked me to hear the words "in a day or so." I was prescribed an even more powerful pain medication, but it seemed like the pain was going away again. I asked if it would be okay to go to work today, but the doctor recommended that I didn't do so until they figured out the cause of my ankle pain. Randy allowed me to spend the night at his house so that if the x-ray results came back the following day, it would only take 5 minutes to drive to the hospital. The next morning, I was pleasantly surprised to feel almost no pain at all in my right ankle. Randy was shocked as well. Nevertheless, I took some painkillers while waiting for the doctor's call. Later that afternoon, the doctor called Randy to inform him that the x-ray results had just arrived. I was ready to get some real answers, so my brother drove me to the hospital as soon as possible. Right as we entered the doctor's office, he asked me, "What do you do for a living?" Somewhat confused, I replied, "I'm a server at a deli restaurant." The doctor then asked, "How much hours do you work in a single day?" I answered, "Well, I've been working 10-hour shifts lately." The doctor began nodding his head and showed me the x-ray image of my ankle. There was a medium-sized crack in the bone. He explained that strenuous activity of the bone for long periods of time without rest was most likely the cause of the ankle pains. The doctor also advised me to limit the amount of pressure I put onto my right ankle and to try not to move it around so much. With that in mind, I finally went home and told my boss that I wouldn't be able to work for 2 weeks. To my boss's dissatisfaction. It was already evening again, and I laid down on my own bed for the first time in 2 days. I looked up at the ceiling, thinking about what the doctor told me. I doubted that standing all day at work could really cause that much pain. Then I looked towards my bedroom window, which reminded me of the pale woman whom I had nearly forgotten about. I wondered if the woman was still planning to scare me. It was as if the woman was taunting me in my own head, saying, "Look out the window." Curiosity got the best of me once again. So I decided to approach the window with caution. My heart was pounding in my ears, and my breath quivered with each step. The only thing I could hear at that time was my heavy breathing and the whistling of the wind outside. When I looked through the blinds to glance at the other window, I saw the woman just standing there, frozen and emotionless as always. Her head was still tilted to the right, but she never even moved an inch. The woman just stared straight at me. Like during my previous meeting with her, I felt a chill run down my spine. My heart started pounding louder, and my legs were shaking so much that I couldn't control them. The woman's blank stare made me want not to look away. My eyes were watering since I refused to blink even once. I tried to maintain eye contact with her, but my eyelids started to feel heavy. I blinked. The pale woman vanished. I looked down at my feet and took deep breaths to regain composure. By that time, I wasn't sure what I was dealing with anymore. Feeling helpless, I sat on the floor with my back against the wall and with my head just under the window. I began feeling a sharp pain in my right ankle again, probably because my legs were trembling so much. I just sat down for 5 minutes trying to calm my nerves. As insane as it may sound, I needed to take one last peek out the window before going to bed. I remembered from the last time that if I checked once more, the woman would remain gone. So I went with my guts. I stood up with moderate pain in my ankle and peeked through the blinds with my eyes nearly closed. I slowly opened them. But before I could clearly see the other side, I had a bad feeling the woman would reappear again. I felt heavy presence close by. The presence you feel when you think someone is watching you. So it was like I knew she would reappear this time. With my eyes fully open now, I was surprised to see that the pale woman wasn't there. All of a sudden, my bedroom door creaked behind me. I froze for a second and then turned around thinking someone moved it. No one was there. My legs starting to tremble once more and my skin was being protruded by goosebumps. I sat down because my right ankle started to hurt again. What followed was a dead silence that lasted for what felt like an hour. Not even a single breeze whistled outside. Out of nowhere, I heard a distant scream. It sounded like it came from the house next door. Instinctively, I got up on my feet and looked through the blinds to see what was going on. Right in front of my face was the pale woman looking straight at me, eye to eye. She was standing on the other side of my bedroom window. Strands of her thick black hair ran down her face. Her eyes had no pupils at all, and her mouth was wide open, making these distinctively loud choking noises. Blood started dripping down the right side of her lip. I jumped back and screamed. Scared as hell, I jumped into bed and hid under the covers in hopes that I would never have to see that frightening face ever again. I planned on keeping my eyes shut for the remainder of the night. I fell asleep. Several hours later, I began to wake up thinking it was already morning. But before I could even open my eyes and get out from under the covers, I felt my right leg jerking and shaking uncontrollably. I believed I was having muscle spasms. The excruciating pain in my right ankle came back again. When I looked to see what was happening, I flipped the fuck out. The pale woman stood in front of my bed with blood dripping all over her face, with her eyes and mouth wide open, vigorously pulling on my right foot. I tried to pull back my right leg, but the pale woman wouldn't let go. Eventually, I managed to escape free from her grasp by forcefully falling off the bed to my right. I crawled out of the bedroom and spent the rest of the night wide awake in the bathroom. For hours, I stared blankly into space, not being able to fathom what had happened. As soon as it was sunrise, I decided to get the hell out of there. I needed to find a new place to live. What I could never leave behind, however, was the memory of that pale woman's dreadful face and the fact that she had been tugging my right ankle all of those painful nights. The Ghost in Green. These creepy events happened to me when I was working and living in a small town in North Carolina. This was back in 1978. I just graduated high school and was working for a small finance company as branch manager. I needed a place to stay and was fortunate enough to find a trailer for rent that was just outside of town. Note, the landlord never mentioned the fact that this place was haunted until after I moved out and handed him the keys. The trailer sat in a small trailer park of 5 trailers, and mine was the one that bordered the woods at the back of the park. Nothing out of the ordinary happened for the first couple of weeks. Then one night, I came home late after having car troubles and found the front door wide open and all the lights on in the trailer. The friend that followed me home that night asked me if I always went to work in the morning and left my front door open and all the lights on. I told her no, and we went in to investigate. To my surprise, everything was as it was when I left, except for the lights and the front door. A few weeks later, I was sleeping in the far back bedroom and had only been laying there about 10 minutes. I was in that half asleep, half awake stage. All of a sudden, the whole trailer started to violently shake. It shook for about 15 or 20 seconds, and I jumped out of bed. When my feet hit the floor, the trailer stopped shaking. I grabbed a billy stick that I kept under my bed and slowly went down the hall to investigate. Note, the weather was calm and clear that night. As I slowly made my way down the long hall, I turned the lights on as I went. First, the bathroom, nothing. Then the spare bedroom, nothing. But then, I rounded the corner to the living room and froze in my steps. Something was different. Something was out of place, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. Then I looked across the living room into the kitchen and saw something lying on the floor. Something I had never seen before. It was a small round object about the size of a dessert plate. After kicking it around with a billy stick, I finally picked it up and realized it was a smoke detector that had its front cover missing. Problem number one, there was no markings on the ceiling where this thing fell from. Problem number two, I don't ever remember seeing a smoke detector anywhere in the trailer before. Problem number three, the deadbolts and the chain locks were locked from the inside, and there's no way anyone could have gotten inside without busting the door down. You will understand who placed the smoke detector by the end of my story. After trying to figure it out for about an hour, I finally got frustrated, tossed the smoke detector on the top of the fridge, and went to bed. The next morning, it was still there. All is well for about another week, then one night, I came home late again, after a night out on the town at a few bars. I'd had a few beers over the course of the evening, but was in no way over the legal limit to drive. About midnight, I made my way home. On the way, I stopped by the 7-Eleven all-night convenience store and picked up some stuff to make sandwiches with and a 6-pack of canned Cokes. Note, this was back in the day when canned drinks came in 6-packs. I made it home, made myself a sandwich, put the 6-pack of canned Cokes in the fridge and pulled one out to drink while eating my sandwich. I had not finished my Coke by the time I finished my sandwich, so I took the Coke to my bedroom and placed it on my nightstand. All was quiet, good night's sleep. The next morning is Saturday, so I got up, threw on my jeans and an old t-shirt, and then headed for the kitchen to make breakfast. I picked up the now warm Coke off my nightstand and took it to the kitchen to pour down the sink and throw the can away. After doing this, I opened the fridge to get the eggs out and noticed 2 Cokes missing from the 6-pack. Confused, because I know I only drank one the night before, I reached in and got the eggs, closed the fridge door. As the door closes, something caught my eye over in the living room. There, sitting on the end table next to the couch, was an empty Coke can and a telephone receiver. The old rotary phones had been taken off the hook and was sitting on top of the empty Coke can. I looked at the front door, and again the deadbolt and chain lock were locked from the inside. Okay, now I'm thinking something paranormal may be going on, which was later confirmed that afternoon by the lady next door. I never met Margaret until that Saturday because she was a registered nurse and worked weird hours. She just happened to be out in her yard walking her little dogs when I went out to take the trash. We exchanged the normal hi, how are you doing, my name is so-and-so, etc. Then as we started a conversation, I asked her if anything strange ever went on over at her place, and I proceeded to tell her some of the things that had happened to me since I moved in. When I started telling her about the smoke detector I found on the floor, she turned white as a sheet. "What's wrong?" I asked. She said, "Honey, if I told you, you wouldn't step a foot back in that trailer." Okay, now I'm worried. But I have to know, and I begged her to tell me. "Well," she said, "not in your trailer, but on the same spot that your trailer sits today, there was another trailer. Some 10 to 15 years earlier, a young woman committed suicide by locking all her doors and setting her trailer on fire. She had called her mom right before she did it. Margaret said the young woman was the one who had been haunting the trailer, and her ghost must have brought me the smoke detector so the same thing wouldn't happen to me. She said that she was surprised that I'd stayed as long as I did. The other tenants only lasted about a week. The landlord couldn't keep the place rented due to the fact that it was haunted." Okay, now I have a lot to think about. Do I stay or do I go? I stayed, but I had a friend move in with me to share the rent, and I felt a little better knowing someone else was there. I wasn't alone at night. Safety in numbers, right? Well, I told him all the stories and what Margaret had told me, and he was like, "It's all in your head, man. There's no such thing as a ghost." Well, it didn't take long to make a believer out of him. Now, at this point, just think that it happened, of course, on a dark and stormy night, right after my roommate had moved in. We stayed up till about 1 a.m., playing cards and watching TV. When I went to the bedroom in the back, and he crashed on the couch. At about 2 a.m., I lay awake listening to the storm. I was laying on my side. All of a sudden, something grabbed my ankle. I looked up and saw the ghost of a young woman in a green dress standing at the foot of my bed. She was just standing there with a pleasant smile on her face. And yes, she leaned over the bed and had her hand on my ankle. Small bolts of lightning from the storm outside lit the room just enough where I could see her. Terrified, I tried to scream, but nothing came out. I lay there looking at her for what seemed like an eternity, but in reality it was only about 30 or 45 seconds. All of a sudden, a big flash of lightning hit that lit up the room like daytime, followed immediately by a crack of thunder. When the room got dark again, she was gone, and no more pressure on my ankle. I reached for the lamp on my nightstand and turned it on. After going to the bathroom and regaining my composure, I finally went back off to sleep, leaving my lamp light on, of course. The next morning, when I got up and went to the living room, my roommate was lying on the couch with a blanket pulled tight around his shoulders and his eyes the size of silver dollars. When I entered the room, I startled him and he pulled the blanket over his head. When he realized it was me, he got up and asked me if I was walking around at about 3 a.m. this morning. My ghost encounter happened around 2 a.m., and by 3 I was fast asleep. I told him no, that I was asleep at 3. Now, in a single wide trailer, you can hear every footstep a person makes, and you can tell where they are just by the sound of the steps. He said that around 3 a.m. he heard footsteps coming from my bedroom. The footsteps got louder as they came down the hallway, and he was waiting for me to come around the corner, but I never did. As the footsteps got closer to where he was, lying on the couch, he didn't see anyone. He froze and waited for the worst. The footsteps entered the living room, walked between the couch where he was lying and the coffee table, then proceeded to walk into the kitchen, around the kitchen table, back into the living room and retracing their steps back into my bedroom. He said he had laid there awake on the couch and waited for daybreak and for me to get up. My first words to him before I told him what happened to me that night was, "I told you this place is haunted." Needless to say, we moved out the next week. When I handed the keys to my landlord and told him some of the things that happened, he just smiled and said that I had stayed in that trailer longer than anyone. He didn't know what he was going to do with the place. I suggested he try staying there for a week, and he just gave me a blank stare and said there's no way he would spend one night in that place. Looking back, I don't think the ghost in the green dress was out to harm anyone. She was just a lost soul looking for someone to interact with or bring peace to herself so she could cross over into the light.